welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you, for a full hour of nonsense, and oh, I'm not exaggerating. If you were expecting sense, or came here with sense, or have some sense, prepare to lose it. I've lost mine, and I couldn't be happier. No sense. No dollars either. Just love and ideas. Love and ideas. Oh, hello, my friends. It's so good to see you. It's like clockwork. I am glad that we have a regular appointment. Otherwise, I don't think that we'd see each other on a regular basis. You know, you mean well. You say, hey, we really ought to get together, you and I, my old friend. And I've said that to a lot of people. And then the next time I see them, sometimes they're heavily made up because they've been embalmed. So you really want to jump on that sometimes. We don't have all the time in the world. So it's good to make appointments. So either make appointments to see your friends regularly or become involved in some really inappropriate relationship with your therapist. And then you say, well, I know at Tuesday at this hour, everything is going to be okay or weird. But it's weird together. Oh, my goodness. You know, some things can be so frightening. But if we do them together, and even if we perish, doing them together, it just is better. How did I learn that? Three Stooges. You think of all those situations the Three Stooges go into, like a haunted house or what have you. Let's say we got to go in to a haunted house and do plumbing, which we're not capable of doing. So there's two things going on. Terrified of the spirits and also really bad imposter syndrome. Saying, I know I'm not a good enough plumber. And those things can be made better, I think, by doing them with friends in a group. Look how few pop groups or rock groups have imposter syndrome when they should. That's because they have a beautiful support group, and they have other friends in the group doing cocaine with them and saying, we're incredible, like that. And you don't have to do the drugs to have that self-delusion that's so necessary to survive. And I'm not being sarcastic. You really do have to have. And I say it's delusion, but it's really an imagination. We're giving a wonderful blank canvas. It's like a television. And you say, what am I going to program onto it? And then that's your decision. I have more than one friend that works with the dying and with the agencies that go in and say, hey, you're poor and you're dying any minute. Do you need anything? And I can't give it to you if you do, but just let me know. So sometimes they go in and they help as they can. And I believe this happened more than once that the person says, hey, could you look at my television? Because my antenna's not right and the vintage TV program network isn't coming. I'm not going to give them any free publicity. Everybody fend for themselves. But I... you know, it's not coming in, and I can't see my Andy Griffith show or what have you, Mama's Family, and I'm dying, and that's the last thing I want to see. That's the last thing I want to see. Literally, it's the last thing I want to see is something like Mama's Family. I feel the same way because I think, wow, I feel less attached to life. You know what? I'm looking at Ken Berry up there, and I'm thinking, if that's all there is, it's like a Peggy Lee thing, Peggy Lee existentialism. I'm outie. If that's it, if that's the best you can do, goodbye. And that's what that vintage television makes you feel. You go, okay, that might have been peak humanity. And I'm unimpressed. But especially, the advertisements really make me feel like a Zen master. So, wow, I thought I had some affection for humanity or forever, even myself. And now I don't. I think it's really the most beautiful telling thing. A lot of stuff that I see on television as accidental poetry, things that have meaning, unintended meaning, and say, oh, I'm being bombarded by these accidental metaphors and things like that. But these drug ads, where the symptom is worse than the ailment. So it's just a gambling. It must be an ad for gambling. Hey, come to Las Vegas. How much money do you have now? There's a chance you could have more or less, depending. Ask your doctor whether compulsive gambling is right for you. And then you'd say, oh, my goodness, okay. Well, and I don't know if those things are say. Oh, it's not like they're going to happen. We just got to cover our butts. Well, I don't know if I want to take medicine from a butt coverer. First of all, where's his hands been? And say, now you're going to hand me a pill after it's been shielding thy anus from consequences? Nah, I don't think so. Bless you so much. But I watch these things anyway. Because even if you're not going to get positive inspiration, they could, like the Bible, give you some negative lessons. And I don't think people understand that about the Bible enough. They go, those are just horrible things that happen in it. Exactly. They're like cautionary tales. You want to know the Brothers Grimm and all those things? All those bad things happening to children. It's to keep them out of the woods and away from creepy people who have cabins in the woods alone. They've always been dangerous. You know? So there's nothing wrong with a story that keeps people out of the children out of the cabins of creeps. And that's where the movie Heidi all goes all wrong and breaks down. So one of them could be a sweet grandfather. Even though he seems violently hostile. No, trust your instinct. Heidi could be the real monster. I don't know. I've never seen the rest of the movie. Who knows? If it's some kind of genetic predisposition to dysthymia or something, and then she becomes depressive and isolated and a hermit. That just keeps going. You don't want that. So, but I do watch the old television sometimes as I don't want to say palliative, because that is like when you're dying, they give you whatever drugs. I'm not going to mention them. But, so here you go. Now we'll take care of your pain. I go, oh, thank you. Now that I'm dying. Yes. Wouldn't it have been great to take care of my pain while I was alive? Oh, no, no sympathy, stupid living thing. Now that you're dying, I feel that you're less of a threat. And so here you go. Take as much candy as you want. Leave some for the living. But I want to play. We're going to maybe listen to a little bit of a show because I like these Westerns. Now I'm conflicted. Oh, I'm conflicted. In the same way I am when I watch Hogan's Heroes and think, oh, I hope nothing bad happens to Colonel Klink. Because accidentally I've gotten some kind of benign comic Stockholm syndrome. I'm going, this fella seems nice. Also, you know, John Banner, yes, it's an affable Jewish cabaret performer. So that maybe that's what I'm responding to. I hope nothing happens to Schultz. He's just playing a Nazi. Then I watch the cowboy movies and I'm thinking, gosh, I hope nothing, I'm not sure who the good guys and the bad guys are. Cause I just, it feels like stuff that happened to the bad guys and their families. You know, don't do that to me. It's complicated, isn't it? But I still watch them because I need that. I don't need stark, false morality tales. I like when they say we're gonna follow a young working class Nazi family. This is a Hogan's Heroes episode, and they're just behind their bit. I don't know, but that's the kind of the. And you say, well, the cowboys and those frontier people—they're the bad guys. Well, I'm not gonna go into it, but I mean, there's the people were living there, so I'm. You know, and they, look, historically, I'm thinking they wiped out all the animals and everything, a lot of them. So, pretty sure that the people shooting buffalo from a train with no intention of going and getting the buffalo just to see them drop dead are the, you know, those people on that train made it to California. I'll just say that. And what did they do then? Well, they said, what do we have experience doing? We've been taking shots at innocent animals and just killing them for sport. Let's start the film business or something, entertainment industry. I think that, so that probably is why they immediately say we're going to go for the Westerns or really. And that's one of the first things they started making. You look at the silent movies, these are, we're going to make Westerns. Some of that is because the early American movie studios were in, you know, North Jersey. And so they thought, hey, we got all this. This looks like out west, really. Let's just make, let's do that, make Westerns. And then finally, I think they did go out to California and, wow, it's far easier out here, isn't it? But you can do amazing things out there. And just, you know, Fort Lee looks to me exactly like Fort Apache or something. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But I watch these Westerns, and I'll name some of them as if they were books of the Bible, because they all have different characters and stories and all different kind of morality. Sometimes the hero is a sheriff, a lawman. They call say lawman. He represents the law, like Samuel in the book of Samuel or something. So the lawman, let's say in Gunsmoke, is Dylan. Which Dylan? One of them. One of the Dylans. I don't know. It's either, sometimes it's a last name of a poet. Sometimes it's the first name of a poet. Sometimes it's the first name of a frat boy. Sometimes it's the first name of a, I don't know, of a deli that's named like Dill and Rye. I don't really know, but Marshall, that's his first name, Marshall. I went to school with a Marshall. Marshall Sheriff Dillon. Sheriff Marshall Dillon, something like that. Judge could be a first name, like that actor named Judge something. Sheriff Judge. Sheriff Judge Major. So there's the Gunsmoke. There's the Bonanza. I like that. Bonanza has Lauren Green. Lauren Green. And that's how they spoke in the Old West, is ranchers out there would say, oh, little Joe, bring your brother horse here. I must speak to him about matters concerning the Ponderosa Ranch. Here in, I don't know where they're based, but that's the way he spoke. He spoke in a dialect that we now call, or maybe even then, Canadian Dainty, which is their version of our transatlantic. And is that the mid? Here's my explanation. Trans means all over the, from Atlantic back and forth, right? As opposed to people that speak like they're from Baltimore. So that's how I always think, mid-Atlantic, but I could be wrong. Here's my Baltimore. You want to hear my Baltimore accent? It's also my Philadelphia accent. Here it is. I'm not going to do it for you. Bless you so much. I would try it if somebody had it in the transliterated for me, phonetically. A phonetic transliteration. And then we could say it. Some of the vowel sounds might be difficult and might require injections. So I have family from that area. Not from Baltimore. Good God. No, from Philadelphia. And I've always been intrigued at how you're speaking so alien to me. And I also have alien relatives. My second cousin was the model for Chester Gould's Dick Tracy's Moon Maiden. And she was from the moon and had antennae. And she's so sweet. I just have memories of her making moon cakes, these things she called moon cakes for us. But we had more, I remember more interplanetary folks when I was young, just being in stuff and places. And New Jersey, lots of them in New Jersey. And you know how the different minority groups kind of needle each other, you know, and say, oh, you Martians, I don't know, you all speak this way or whatever. It might have even been, that might be the whole big pork roll Taylor ham thing. Might be actually because of moon people. What? Listen, you're not interested in New Jersey history. That's not why you're listening to me. I don't know why you're listening to me. I'm glad that you are. I think it's because I am abusing the technique of public speaking. I am using my voice in ways that traditionally are used to draw someone into a story, to interest them, or to convey some information, or maybe to inspire. You need your heart lifted up? Say, I wish there was somebody who understood just how discouraged I am. Hey, Hardy, I'm nobody. I'm nobody, and I don't know how I got here. And I don't have much power. And yet I live among others, and I worry that I'm going to incur the punishment for their sin. Even though I can't control what goes around them. I just live here in Wagontown. Wagontown. Now, I was watching Wagon Train the other day, and one of the reasons was this. I had seen an episode of Wagon Train for the first time in my life all the way through, I think a couple years ago. And I noticed that there was an actor, I'm not going to go into his name or his character name, I think it's Charlie. But he had one of those voices that I can do when I have bronchitis, and only then. So that's when you turn and say, oh, today I'm Ernie Anderson. Or today I am Lawrence Pallett, is that his name? Little John from the original.
Remember that guy? I think he's also in something else. It might be in Naked City, but I don't think so.
No, he's in, he's one of the in Thin Man movies or something. But that kind of guy. And I can only really do their voice when I have pulmonary obstruction. So he's one of those.
I'm Charlie. I'm cooking meals. That kind of guy.
So he was that guy, and he looked kind of scruffy like me, and I'm always drawn to actors who I think are legitimate alcoholics, and so many were. So how you showing up to work every day like that? Bless you so much. And I'm not saying he was. I have no idea. Oh, it could be just his skincare regimen's not so hot. You don't know how people end up looking the way they do. Also, if you're a character actor, what a blessing. You say, you know, you look at Burt Mustin, you go, boy, that man looked like a walking skeleton since he was 70. And you know, and he had then a 25-year career after that or something like that. And say, that walking skeleton, old man look, where the 11s are up on the back of his neck and everything for decades. Well, that's that probably paid the rent right there. So, but I was looking at that character, and I thought, I'm going to watch one of these. And I'm going to see if it, you know, sometimes, here's the thing. Sometimes I'm thinking one of these is written by somebody who was brought before the House Un-American Activities Committee. I know we're getting some scripts by communists, or very least people that had some kind of social agenda. And I like watching them for that. Because I think, what's the moral lesson here? Because they're often used to deal with something like that. You know, power crisis, you know, the law. We follow the law here, but now someone's come on in, taking over the sheriff's department. What do we do? They're not playing by the rules. What do we do? Do we hire Shane? Shane who? Shane from work, the guy with the mullet? No, not him. The guy, the movies. Oh, I thought you meant Shane Scroggins from work. No. Oh, my gosh. But I'd hire him because I think his brother's not a screw. What do you call him? Prison guard. And they're big boys. And maybe they could get better. But I meant Shane Allen Ladd. Uh-huh. Allen Ladd. And that is... Was that Laura Dern's grandpa? I don't even know. But he was in a movie named Shane, and Shane, these people were having some problems with some bullies, some corporate bullies, so they hired what anybody would do. You hire a gunman or a gunfighter or something like that. And everybody does that. And because if you've got like that kind of lawless gang situation, The Wire is a lot like that too. You know, these groups come in and then they overpower each other. It's always changing. Always changing power dynamic. How do we live our lives among this, the wagon train and this uncertainty? Because as you're riding on the wagon train, you're thinking, you know, this is not really so hot from, you know, a moral perspective here, what I'm doing. I mean, I find myself on this wagon train going across Native people's lands. I don't know if there's going to be violence with these people. They haven't done anything to me. And here I am kind of set up, but I have nothing. So that's also weird too. And so I'm conflicted, you know, out here on the wagon train. This is my character speaking, not me. I wouldn't have gone on the wagon train. Are you kidding me? So I'm out here though, and I wonder, you know, how it is I even got here. I have felt that way on cruises. I've been dragged on a couple of those Caribbean cruises a couple of times, and I've felt like I must accept collective punishment for the sins of this giant vessel. That I understand that I'm riding on the SS, you know, poop bucket or something. Same when you go to you say, let's go be a tourist somewhere that's going to make you question yourself. Yeah. So I've felt that, you know, so I understand the wagon trainers on there. So, but what do we have to learn from them? Well, I feel like nothing. I don't know if I have anything learned right now. Look at those schools they had back then. You had to bring your own chalkboard and everything. I don't know if that's better than an iPad. I wonder if they did. You walk in, they go, chalkboards over there, slates. Oh, put all your writing slates over there. I'm not having you writing on that slate while I'm talking to you. I think they had allowed them to keep them. Because let's say you're making the cursives. Now, how do you make the cursives if somebody doesn't, if you don't sit down there and practice making a cursives? So the teacher goes up there on the board, and teacher writes a big number 2. And all the kids giggle because they said, teacher just made a number 2. And then she got incensed, and she goes, that is a cursive capital Q, you ignorant little. Oh, and she used some terrible language. But it was a capital Q. It wasn't a 2 at all. And what did I learn from that? Hey, want to watch some television? I got a TV here. It's not warmed up or anything, but I did want to maybe just watch a clip of Wagontown, which is one I just discovered. And Wagontown is great because there's no story arc. It's just victimization and then no redemption or no justice. So it's great because they give you a false sense, those Westerns. So everything's at the end, everything brushes off and everything turns out okay. But Wagontown is wonderful because there's no recurring characters. Nobody makes it more than 2 episodes because then they get killed and replaced. And it's fun and something happens every single show, but they're terribly short. And I'm not going to lie to you, I listened to it a lot of times for the music. Gosh, they had wonderful theme songs and incidental music bopping around behind them. And you don't, until you've gone to duplicate it, you don't realize just how standard symphonic orchestra most Western music is. You know, so I thought it was like all, you know, guitars and harmonica. No, I'm finding it's just, you know, lots of trombone, which is wearing trumpet. Trumpet's the big, just majestic. Here we go. Look at that wide open space there. nowhere to hide when you're attacked. So I'm on. Let's get out this old television. It smells funny. It smells a little like mouth, but I don't know of what species.
Well, up, Harold.
Wagon Town. Starring Chip Camragon. Cowboy.
Hey, where's Wagon Town? It's all gone.
I don't know, Charlie.
And where's the guys that we hired to guard it? They're gone too.
I guess they took off.
Uh-oh.
Here comes these bad guys, though.
Well, hello there, citizens. Let me introduce myself and my friends. We're running Wagon Town now, see? There's gonna be some changes around here because we're making Wagon Town better. Yeah, that's right, isn't it, boys? Yeah. And we would appreciate your cooperation in this endeavor here, you see.
Where are the men that we hired to protect it?
Oh, I think they got a better offer somewhere else. I don't see nobody, do you boys?
Hey, we're not just gonna stand here and let you take our town.
Oh, you're right. You shouldn't just be standing around and not helping. I think it's time for you to dig your own graves. Get him some shovels, boys.
Kip, what do we do?
I'm afraid we have no choice, Charlie, but to dig our own graves like this gentleman has asked.
And then what?
Well, and then you put yourself in it.
What are we gonna do, Kip?
I'm afraid, Charlie, we're going to dig our own graves and then get in them the way this gentleman suggests.
Well, that's very frustrating.
It is, Charlie, it is.
But if we cooperate, they'll let us live, right?
No, Charlie, I'm afraid not. I'm afraid we're all going to be put to death.
Well, why didn't we do something back when we first saw them, like shoot them all?
Well, Charlie, you can always second-guess yourself, but I'm afraid there's nothing to be done now.
All right, you two. Less gabbing and more auto-grave digging.
I'm sorry. It's easy to forget your manners in situations like this.
Hypocrite. Now dig.
A lot of times at these shows, you get so invested, and you go, oh, I hope my friends, you think they're your friends, these characters, get out of it. Well, with this show, there's no illusion. They don't get out of it, and they meet a terrible end every week. So then that way, you just say, I know I won't get too attached to these short-timers, and I'll just watch this wonderfully fun show dispassionately and enjoy the music, because a lot of it just sounds like that good, those good American solid what do you call it? I forgot the name of the composer, but you know, it just everything is wheat and ambition, and I love that. And I quote it in my own music a lot of times, like hymns, just the way Charles Ives did. So I'm gonna make just the sounds of America in my music, and. Hey, F, 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 F this, F, F, F you. That is in one of my compositions. People just screaming from their cars at the top of their lungs. But then you put it together, and it's like a composition. I love it. That sounds like an oboe to me. People do that road rage me in traffic. I'll go, sir, I don't mean to break the mood, but you sound like a bassoon. Like the kind when Gilligan does about to do something goofy. I've seen so much fun like that. It can be serious, but it also is so comical. I love it. You know something silly is going to happen That Gilligan music, it defies you, say, you can't not be happy like this. Something that I thought when I was a child watching the Gilligan thing is, I got the wrong message, see, because I thought it was like the Truman Show. And I was thinking, can't they see they're on a soundstage? It just looks completely like a set, that water and everything. Y'all are being held captive. It's some sort of mind game. It's like there was a precedent for that because there was a show, you know, The Prisoner, with McGugahan. And you remember him from Columbo. That's I am number six and number two, and you are a pile of number two, number six. That's that one had been on already. And he was sort of being held on this Gilligan's Island resort, which was actually Port Marion in Wales. And I don't know if it's still there. And you can't go to Gilligan's Island either, but that'd be lovely. I think they tried to do that one time, had a resort. That might have been one of the movies. But I believe that there was a movie where they called Return to Gilligan's Island or something like that, and they turned it into a resort. And can you imagine that? Going back to this place that was the source of your terror. So you know what we ought to do, you guys? You know that mine we were trapped in? At the bottom of that mine that we're trapped in, we ought to turn that into a restaurant. Right? That'd be fun. Let's go back there, and then we can work there every day. And you can serve the food. I'll make the food, everything. I don't know what, something clever. We'll have a clever name. I'll have like Miner or Cave, or I don't know. We'll think. We got lots of time to think. But it's pretty sure it would like to, it should be a pun. Everything should be a pun. You know, now in the age of political upheaval, now is the time to just rename everything as a pun. If there's going to be in a post-serious world, well, everything just have a silly name or just a sound. I've done that with language. I find that language has just outlived its usefulness for me. It doesn't really convey anything. I speak to people. I'm not sure they understand what I'm saying to them. And even the most basic thing, you know, conveying emotion or concern or asking for something, could be completely flipped on its head to the point where the talking doesn't really work. Well, what do you do when your talking doesn't work? What do you do when you can't talk through a thing? Use a puppet. You should use a puppet. That's what we do. I see you put your, this isn't for all kids. This is mainly for adults, and you'll see why. But a good thing to do, let's say you run out of words. And let's say you're at work with your boss. It's very unfair. It's unjust. Maybe they've thwarted your unionizing or something. You put on a puppet, and then you put the puppet on like a hand puppet, and then it's the puppet that's choking the life out of your boss, not you. So it's amazing to liberate, how liberating that can be. So here he comes. And then, you know, you can trick him out with teeth and everything like that. And look at this, what do you call it? Elmo Dentata. And he's got this, look at them choppers. And it's just a small bear trap put inside a Muppet. And you can say, I'm done talking, like that. But puppets can also speak for you. And but just don't use language. So the thing that you could do is you take that puppet and you open the hand up like it's the mouth is open and you scream bloody murder. And that does something to folks neurologically that words can't do. And I can't think of any word that I could use to get someone to vacate their bowels. But I think a good unexpected scream sometimes we'll do that. It's fun. We learn this from when we're kids, just at parties and stuff. You know, it's like you stick someone's finger in warm water and they pee themselves. Stage some sort of gruesome fake crime scene and they become have a psychotic break. But that's not funny, really. That doesn't get funny. The reason I'm saying it is to make the point that we are fragile and beautiful creatures, I believe. And I care for all my beautiful human siblings. And we are related. And it's hard not to see it. And even in things that we do that are horrifying, I see myself, if I'm honest, in a lot of it. And given other situations, who knows what I would be or who I would be or how I would speak. I've always thought that I should use the limited language that I have to advocate for that one very narrow idea, that everything else was sort of outside of my control, that there were going to be horrifying things that happened to me that disrupted my sense of justice, that broke my heart, that broke me. So what do I keep believing? How do I keep going? And it's the idea, the most dangerous idea among humans, but I believe a true one, and that is that we're all equal siblings, that we are all human children. We're also, if you want to keep going, this is harder for people, even though you look in your little doggy's eyes and say, I love you more than I love my parents. That's because that's another creature, and you're not far from that creature either. These are your family. You can see it. Look in the faces, and they look familiar to you. Even when they're strange, you can look at it and you say, I know this face is not the face of an apple. Unless it's one of those charming dried apple face people. Oh, I love those. That brings more joy to my heart than that. Or the old timey South Florida coconut head pirate. Oh, human beings and their art. I will always use mine until I die to advocate and to argue that I'm a human being. I'm related to you. And you go, no, you're not. And I say, yes, I am. Then you go, no, you are. Shut up. You're not. You just said I am. I meant you're not. But the reason you made a mistake is because we make mistakes. And I see that. And I see that in myself. Oh, you know, forgive yourself, forgive others is all very complicated and difficult and all that. But it does really help if you go the next step. What do you mean by that? Okay, let's say I'm out on the wagon train and I say, oh no, are we the baddies? Am I a bad person? Now, I could just self-loathe from that point on and say, I hate myself and hate others. But that seems to be past-focused. When I like to look ahead and say, well, what's the next episode going to be? And when I really think about it and when I really sit down, especially if I sit down to do a precatory prayers where I curse my enemies, I think, well, wait a minute. What do I really want? What's my outcome? What do I really want to happen? You want to change hearts? I do, because that's what I would want to happen to me. Well, do you want to do it naively and be a victim? No. Is there a tricky way? I don't know. Exactly. I am not against tricky ways of doing things. I'm not against hardship, you know? I understand that, but I don't know how to keep getting my message across, because I think every time that I'm foolish, it might reinforce a view that I'm not like the person I'm speaking to who believes themselves to be wise. So how could a foolish person tell a wise person, so-called, that they're the same? They just won't believe you. How do you prove it? Well, here's the answer. And I mean that with all of my soul. So there you go. And then someone else, I believe, will get the gift of interpretation and stand up and they'll know what it means. Oh, all you have to do to prove you're a monkey is be your monkey self. There's nothing you can do to not prove that you are a human being, I believe. So, the way, then what do I do? Then I guess the only thing I have to worry about is surviving. That's a very low bar. It can be high. So you don't have to do anything. You're being alive is the witness of your humanity. Nothing is required of you. As someone who understands this, I believe, I love you. I love you regardless. You don't have to do anything. Well, what if I don't? There's nothing to do. You don't have to do anything. I love you. And feel that for yourself, or will be of no good repairing the world. The world can't be repaired. Golden Gate Bridge can't be painted. I mean, it depends what you mean. You know, I just don't believe the past tense doesn't apply to some things. So, I say, you know, keep going with the wagon train, and we're just, I guess, let's just have different disguises. So let's say you get to a town and somebody's come up to attack you. That would be the time to get out the cactus disguises. And they're all shapes. And the last time I got in the cactus disguise, I had one, my right arm was up in the air, my left arm was kind of hooked down in the air, and my feet were together, and I was able to stay that way a good long time. And it worked, and they went right past us. Another disguise is we have one that's all Mark Twain themed, which is lovely. And then I'm saying, oh, I'm the Dauphin and everything. And we do like a, you know, Huck Finn, Tom Sawyer, Tom Finn, Huck Sawyer thing. And it's lovely. And a lot of times that'll work. Sometimes I will say I am Mark Twain. And I don't know how to do the voice really. But I guess I'm just doing Hal Holbrook. Doing Mark Twain. Do you know Mark? I feel like maybe Mark Twain was actually famous for doing somebody else. Wouldn't that be funny? Oh, yeah, Mark Twain wasn't really a writer. He was a performance artist. And doing a one-man show of this guy named Samuel Clemens. Oh, or vice versa. That's interesting. So you learn something every day. Doesn't have to be true or new. But you do learn something every day. And thank God you forget something every day. I would not still be on the air if people had perfect memories. But they forget what I say, forget what I have said. I forgot that you were still there. I just started listening to you again. I forgot. Isn't that beautiful? That's my blessing. If you'd listened to me the whole time, you'd go, I never have resented or been more tired of a person. Oh, thank you. I still have not been on as long as The Simpsons. But I did start on radio at the same time, I'm pretty sure. I think my first year ever on radio was late 80s, 88, 9, something like that. And it might have been, it was slightly pre-Simpson. I don't know when they came on. But I remember being on the, and the only thing I remember, I was thinking, oh, I think feel like pop culture is getting better. And was it? I do not know. When I was started on the radio, I wanted to be like Paul Harvey. And I still use a Paul Harvey joke that I tell it all the time. That one about, you know, your shoes will be ready next Tuesday. That just really stuck with me. And that's what I wanted to do on the radio. And I thought, well, he was keeping me intrigued on long car trips. And I just remember listening to it or any kind of radio that got me out of myself or, boy, I worshiped that as a kid, you know? Anything I could listen to under the covers, and I did. Who was it? I'm going to be honest. I remember Dr. Demento a lot. I remember that being, and listening to it on what sounded like AM or something, because I know I had a transistor thing where you just get the one, they're not headphones, it's like an earpiece. It just goes in one ear. Like it's a hearing aid from the 40s or something. And I remember, though, and listening to that and, gosh, other stuff. Maybe I didn't even know what it was. And just drifting off, getting outside of myself, letting the voice on the radio be my world for a while. It felt great. But I think what else is it gave me a taste of getting outside myself and journeying to some other places, freeing myself. Knowing that I was larger than this thing that I was in, that I was trapped now in a very small, limited vessel with a limited intelligence, unfortunately, and experience, and means, and all sorts of things. But the feeling I got was that I could jump into a larger sea, that there was an ocean of ideas and experience there, and voices and magic and ideas and scenarios and stories. And I could go into that at any time. And that place had one guard watching the door. Everything else, you know, you can be thrown in prison. You can be have your freedom taken away. But that room in there has one guard. And it's you. And I think that you could develop a relationship with that guard as to where they'd let you in. Say, come on in here. There's something larger than this limiting thing that you're looking at. There's a bigger world. A world that's not limited by the petty thoughts and the horror of the consequences of human beings' fears. So how do we get there? Well, come with me. I'll tell you how we get there. You get on the... Do you remember H.R. Puffin stuff?
Yeah.
Well, he's got... So, I'm going to give you address. He's got this place that's a little sketchy. It's in Chinatown. It's not on Mott Street. I'll give you directions. So, you go down some stairs, and you're going to get this thing. I'm worried about telling you this. You know what? DM me. It'd be easier. Bless you. I want to give you the key. I want to open your world. I want to open your heart. I want you to feel the whole power of the universe cursing through you. Because the fact that you're thinking, that's what's going on. What an amazing thing. And look out. Look over there at you, dressed as a villain in a black hat, about to oppress yourself. Gonna come into your town, Wagon Town, and flip everything. Well, what do we do then? Well, I'd say what we ended up doing was we snuck into the bad guys' headquarters and we switched all their hats. And the new hats, made them feel less fearful, more lighthearted, and therefore more generous to other people. And that's what they needed. I don't know. I have no clue. You may be listening to the wrong person. You may be wasting your time with this sort of frivolity. Because as you can plainly see, it's something that's masquerading as wisdom, but it's clearly chaotic. So it can't be. You know? It can't be. But I like to think of it as sort of monkey kung fu. Try to guess my moves. I wonder if you can guess what I'm going to say next. Can you guess what I'm going to say next? I wish you wouldn't be able to.
Do you think you can?
I don't think you can.
Can you?
You might be able to.
Can I try?
Go ahead.
You're going to say nope.
You're going to say nope.
Nope.
You said nope.
I said you were going to say nope, and you said nope.
I didn't say nope. I don't think you can guess what I'm going to say next or what I'm thinking, because I don't know. And so by remaining a slight mystery to myself, it's kind of a security measure. I don't know what I think at any given time, which is great. It makes me inscrutable to myself as well. But one thing I don't do is get mad at myself about it. So I don't know what I think. What do I think about that? I don't know. But I sure do think about it. I just don't come to any conclusions. As long as I'm thinking, I'm staying above water. I'm moving ahead. And that I know is that's the least I can do. Oh, I love you. Your love goes a long way. We have such power of healing over one another. If we weren't stingy with it, we're very stingy with it. Because, you know, we're fearful that we're going to give away everything to somebody. We're going to love them. They're not going to love us back. So if I'm encouraging to you, what if you don't encourage me back and I'm just giving away all my encouragement? Then I feel foolish. So even though we do have this power to really just uplift one another, to help each other overcome our fears, we're very reluctant to use it. You know? Because it does make you vulnerable. Every time that you open up your purse to give something to someone, you've opened up your purse, and you could be robbed. So it's a state of vulnerability. But all you have to do is know that that purse is endless, bottomless. You can steal as much as you want out of it. Here, take the whole purse. Go ahead. I was gladly... Why do you give away all your stuff and everything? What do you mean? Well, you talk on the... I'm just going to not do that. Two voices. I'll just speak to you. I speak on the radio and I make things up and I tell stories and I give them away and it's absolutely free and you can actually use it in your art if you want to. You can grab pieces of what I say. You can put music to you and go, now this is mine. You can go off and you can make money with it. You can buy a whole house. You don't have to give me anything. That's up to you. I don't care. Take it all. Why? Because I'll make more. Everything I make is like, to me, is like biscuits. I can't keep those biscuits. That's a daily thing. I make biscuits, I give them out. You eat the biscuits. But they're impermanent. They're transient. They're ephemeral. And the real thing lies within. The real gift can't be taken. So I can just keep giving.
Well, what do you need to, you need to live?
I don't have to. You can starve me to death. Give me nothing. You know? So that's an option. I can't live without cooperation. You know? So it's up to you. Bless you. Bless all one. I'm just glad we're together. And being silly. and having access to a radio to hear different voices. Not everybody thinks alike or thinks the same thing. Gosh, you know? And sometimes it's dangerous. Like, what if they believe, like, you should die and things like that? Well, it's very complicated. You're really, again, if you're tuning into me to say, well, what do we do about the problem of evil? You've got to remember that I didn't make it that far in school, and I haven't really read that many books, and they are out there, and people have been worrying about and thinking about that problem for a long time. I couldn't recommend more highly to turning to someone with some credentials or has something to say. They are really lots of people saying lots of great things out there. I'm more like a silly guy who wanders into the, every once in a while when you're at the barber shop, this weirdo wanders in, he's not getting a haircut, and he'll say some joke and then leave. That's me. So that's all I got. I know I'm not going to save the world. I know I'm not going to repair the world. But I'm not going to steal your nail gun. So, and I won't get in your way. And I'll repair it as in the only way I know how. And that's my silly little bit. But oh my goodness, I do try to make space for what you might think are utopian visions. But if I don't visualize a thing, I know it won't happen. I know it won't happen. You don't go off to let's make a movie. Okay, what's it going to be about? Let's just trust that it'll be good. You got to visualize every single detail. And you go, well, there's no way it'll turn out like that. Well, it really won't if you don't plan it. So I do have utopian visions of the future of people loving one another and helping one another and understanding basic truths about life. And if I didn't think that, then I would have nothing to think, you know? So I do recommend that you ride the dual horses, have a foot on both of them, like an old Western entertainer, where there's a dark horse that shows you the potential and the depths of human depravity, and a white horse that has your other foot on it that shows you the potential of human good. And you ride those, and you try to keep them from what? Pooing on somebody's street? I don't even know. I don't sounded really good up to then. I don't have any. Well, keep going. I don't have anything after that. That sounds great. With the two horses that are good and evil and everything. But no, I got nothing. Oh, bless me. I think I'd be like sipping on champagne right now if I had better organizational skills. Or if you think, one of the reasons I'm going to be honest with you. One of the reasons that I don't work from a script is I can't read very well. And as my eyes get worse, I just have a hard time. And so I have to memorize. I like to memorize things. And so I think that's held me back a little bit. I'd be good if I could. I got a thing coming up where I got to read. And I'm terrified. I'm hoping, well, maybe something will happen and I'll perish. Yeah. I think that between all my doctor's appointments. Like, well, maybe I won't live to see it. And I won't have to. Then I won't have to panic because I've already been gone. Oh, I love you so much. Thank you for being my friend. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County in New York City, New York, and online at WFMU.org. Worldwide, you have blessed me with your presence today. I hope you have enjoyed it or have been in some way amused or angered in a way that makes you give me a car. Or something. I don't know. I'm just trying to spin things so that they all work out for all of us. I love you. Hang in there. Bless you. And here we go. Excelsior.
name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. Twins' name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. Twins' name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. Twins' name was Ebony. Mahogany. Twins' name was Ebony. Her name was 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 Mahogany. Twins' name was Ebony. Twins' name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. 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 Twins' name was Ebony.
Thank you. are still mine. And if that Valentine doesn't reach you, it's okay. Now it's